This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. Today, I'm talking to Kevin Jack McEnroe about his book, Our Town, which came out in the spring of 2015. Is that right?
May 12th, yeah.
I kind of ran across you by accident at Book Expo in New York.
Good job,
where you were signing books for bookstores, mostly. And I was, you know, it's just totally random that I picked this book up. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it a lot. Just to set the scene, it's about a character named Dorothy White, who is a B movie starlet. Book starts in the when she's born, mm-hmm. you know, or actually when she's really little. And there's a you have a great line at the very beginning of the book, which gets repeated later on, which I really liked. And it's she never quite figured out how to get out of her own way, which really kind of summarizes the entire book.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways. And then I noticed, of course, it happens at the end. The story is about her life, and it's a fairly short life and kind of sad mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. I found it to be, I don't know, I don't want to do all the talking, but I found it really painful in some ways, but also very warm and loving. And I'm, you know, really struck by the fact that you're a guy writing about, a character who couldn't, you know, could be pretty far from you, you know, both in time and I'm kind of interested in how it was for you as a writer to inhabit this character.
Well, it actually started, I think the thing that drew me to her the most is what you is the sentence that you read that I think is sort of the thesis for the whole book, which is I think that her inability to get out of her own way, or her sort of belief that she didn't sort of deserve success, is something that I think I have too. And I think that's what drew me to her. You know, she was known, the character is based relatively loosely on my grandmother, Joanna Moore, who was considered in my family a kind of cautionary tale, you know, a sort of a screw up and, you know, somebody, a waste of potential. And I think that there was always much more to her than that. Even though I only met her a couple of times, there was something I just found very interesting about her. And that feeling of wasted potential and of this, there was something that I just, that drew me to her. And actually it all started when I took my first ever writing class when I was 19 in college. And my first assignment was to write from the perspective of the opposite sex.
A good exercise, usually.
Yeah. And well, it was, you know, and at those prompts at the time, you know, when you're first starting are sort of helpful. And that's where it all started with her. And I guess, you know, the first thing I ever, why I decided to write about her, who I'd only met once or twice, a version of that story actually remains in the book, you know, about a young kid's interaction with his grandmother.
Right. Yeah. Jack Jr.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's remained in the book throughout, because I think that was sort of the heart of why I started. And that's actually how it all happened. And I don't know how I was able to. I didn't think about it as much as, you know, man versus woman. I just thought I knew her, you know, mm-hmm. so I just thought I could write her.
It felt like you were, you know, writing to find her. You know,
that's exactly more like it. By the end, I knew her.
Yeah.
You know, trying to figure this person out.
Because she's somebody you don't know.
Right.
And so you have to, it's a novel, so, mm-hmm. you know, it's really this sort of tricky territory between fiction and nonfiction when you're writing. Imagining someone
right.
who you don't really know, but kind of do know, you mm-hmm. know, because she's in your family.
Right.
But of course, you make her different. But was your grandmother also orphaned at this early age, or is that something that you made up to give her a kind of background, a place?
I wanted to be very honest about the fact that it was based on my grandmother. So there were a few hard line facts that I stuck to, and one of them was that yes, her family, she was in a car accident with her family, and everyone else died.
Right, which is pretty,
you know, yeah. insane. So that was one of the facts that remained, and there was a few other things, but I tried very closely to, like, I never asked my mom about her. you know, I would look on the internet and I would look at stuff and I would look at almost the lore of her in Hollywood, but I didn't want it to be strictly about Joanna. I wanted the character to be based on her, but then hopefully, my favorite review that I got was that, you know, it's clear that it's about somebody, but that Dorothy becomes her own person as well.
Well, she is.
You know, Dorothy becomes this amalgamation of all of these different things, and she rises above just being, you know, sort of tabloid fodder. And that was important to me by the end.
Well, and I, you know, I read the book without actually knowing
that she was, ideal,
which is really good. And definitely, I mean, difficult for you in some ways because there's all this other stuff going on about you and your family. And so, and I think the book is more important than all that other stuff. But
certainly for me it is,
yeah, but it's hard to escape.
Yeah, it is. And I think that the thing that can be hard is based on some of the press and stuff that it's, you know, people can read it for the wrong reasons, I think, and they don't tend to like it that much because they're not maybe they're not into reading novels normally. You know, maybe they're not into writership. They're not into the fact that the words are very important to me as much as the story is, you know. And I think that that's some of the I don't mind if people don't like it, but I just don't want them to not like it because it's not, you know, because they think I'm trying to take, you know, like be exploitative or something.
Right. Well, I didn't feel that at all.
Yeah.
I did notice that some of the reviews kind of go off into more, it's more like more personal celebrity stuff.
Yeah.
Even the, you know.
That can be unfortunate.
Right. Well, and there was, I think the Times did that too. And, you know, I thought the book deserves to be attended to. As
yeah,
a book.
Right.
So that's what I'm more interested in.
Yeah, me too. I mean, the Times piece I thought was okay. They were interested in. I like that there was, you know, because there are these three generations of characters in the book, and then there were these three generations of Joanna, my mother, and myself that sort of in some ways aligned. And, you know, I was certainly much more something I was disappointed by was that it wasn't reviewed by the Times. But
they don't review that many books.
Yeah, and a lot of first novelists and stuff. That was a dream of mine, given being from New York and stuff. And at least I was in the paper. You know, I thought I was in the paper. That was pretty cool.
Right.
So
it is pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that.
Most novels, you know, most people don't get their books reviewed in New York.
Attempting to toe the line between, you know, doing publicity and attempting to keep. I've gotten pretty good, I think, about keeping it on sort of book-centric interviews, and if I know which ones are not going to be that, and I'd steer clear of those, even if it's going to sell me a couple of books, it's not as important to me, you know. Right.
So let's talk about the writing,
sure.
You know, because I felt like it was a really interesting choice to make the narrator a kind of omniscient, and you kind of trying to figure out who is this voice, you know, who is this person, and in the end, you really don't know, and you have to just be left with it's like, I mean, it is a kind of God voice, you know, or it's more like the kind of collective viewer of the person's life, you know, and I thought that was
really
interesting.
It's like the idea of her versus the real her or something. Yeah. And it was something I really liked to do and I was playing with. And I also thought, you know, having fun with being somebody that could kind of cut through a lot of the, you know, the character sense. Because I like being able to bounce from character to character, but in order to do that, I felt I needed somebody to kind of finesse that and make it, you know, actually, you know, a lot of the characters, you know, aren't being necessarily honest with themselves. So somebody should at least be honest with the reader. You know what I mean?
Well, also,
One of my professors that I loved says that it's in the first person still, because even though I don't really say the first, there's somebody that is sort of speaking in the eye the entire time
by pointing out. And you play with time.
Playing with time and showing you here, now we're here, and we used to, you know, moving along.
Well, and you play with the idea of story, too, because you say almost like, you know, the narrator in a novel might, or this sort of, like, oh, we're not quite there yet. Here's something that's going to happen later.
But, like, don't worry.
Pay attention to this.
Right. I loved doing that. That was the most fun thing. I loved doing that because I was so many times I found when I was taught writing that you're just told just entirely, you know, don't do stuff like that. And I was always just like, it's why not? It's fun, you know, to be able you know, she's smoking, this is what she's smoking now, but eventually she'll be smoking Virginia Slims.
Right.
You know what I mean? That or stuff like right. that. It's somebody that I want. I needed the readers, I thought, to know that somebody kind of knew what he was doing and was choosing which aspects to show. Was almost showing you that the most, you know, while maybe people might want to see their wedding, you know, or stuff like that, that's not as important to the story as what I'm choosing to show you.
Right. No, you're taking control.
Yeah.
And you're also...
Or whoever the narrator is. I like the idea of playing, too, with the fact that the narrator could even be the writer. You know what I mean? It could even be me. Like, it doesn't necessarily it bridges so many things that I'm not even trying to pretend that it's not just what I think of the story. Do you know what I mean? And I thought that was kind of a fun thing to do, too, and allow for that kind of, you know, I didn't want to necessarily be, antagonistic to people, but I didn't mind people going like, God, who's telling me this, you know?
Well, no, but I think it also gave you authority.
And yeah.
It kind of creates this idea that there is a story, and right. I know what the story. In other words, I'm telling you a story. Mm-hmm. I'm not just letting something unfold.
Right.
I've actually got something here to show you.
Yeah, and then what I'm showing you is going to at times feel like you're going to want more. You know, at times it's going to feel, but trust me, this is what's important to who this right. person is, or to at least the understanding of who the narrator thinks this person is.
Right.
You know, it's what he thinks is the best thing about her is the pieces of her life that he's willing to show.
Well, and he's also talking about not just her. I mean,
oh, everybody.
There's
yeah.
like her husband,
yeah.
and this kind of gruesome character who's the preacher she
the preacher,
gets involved
right?
with, who's.
Sure.
It's just like bizarre,
mm-hmm.
and
that was fun,
but you know, so. As you kind of indicate that she keeps on getting in the way of herself, but
right.
then she also gets in the way of her kids, and
yeah.
then her kids get in the way of themselves.
But because it's, I think that's what's passed down, and I think, but also getting in the way of yourself, I think implies for me that she keeps trying. She's just sort of wrong-footed in doing so.
Right.
You know, she doesn't do. She keeps taking these crazy measures to sort of pull it up. Like the preacher thing she feels like she needs to quit everything and become kind of a born again Christian or something. Realize when in reality it's just sort of relax is probably the best thing to do and kind of take it easy and you know not to be hokey but one day at a time and try and unsubscribe from some of your excesses. And for her, it's like, oh my God, I got to try this huge thing and that huge thing, and that was something that I found kind of endearing, you know, is that she didn't stop trying; she just didn't know how to do it right.
Well, and the sort of sad part is she didn't know.
She
had no clue.
Yeah,
and yeah, she kept on trying. I think the part that I thought was loving was that you allowed her to not be judged.
No, never.
You know, that, or you took away the judgmental
yeah.
and made it more about a love for another human being.
Yeah, I think that was the most important thing for me is I think the people that have understood it the least to me are people that say I'm just beating her up the whole book. And in reality for me, it's, I think that what I was trying to do anyway, I don't know if I, you know, succeeded, but I think all of us probably have, you know, some Dorothy in us, even if it's, you know, do I need like another, do I need that French fry or whatever? Do I need,
right.
you know, even if it's to that level, hers is so extreme
right.
where it's like, I can't go if I don't have another bottle of wine, you know what I mean? And that kind of stuff. Like, but there is that feeling of knowing you're doing something wrong and doing it anyway, that I think that, you know, I certainly have been through, and I think that, you know, everybody honestly has in some capacity, and I think that she's just, hers are just sort of an extreme example of something that is innately human.
Yeah. Well, there's a tendency, I think, first of all, we all become judgmental
right.
of others. It's a way mm-hmm. of making ourselves feel better.
Yeah.
And then denying conscious mind, denying mm-hmm. unconscious reality.
Right.
You know, when you really, people maybe do know themselves,
mm-hmm.
but they don't want to admit it.
Right.
And so when you say, I think, you know, that there's a part of her in everybody, I think that's right.
Yeah.
It would be, you know, we think that we're so good. Well, I have foibles.
Absolutely.
I've screwed up.
Yeah, time, screwed up. And it's not even just screwing up. It's screwing up. I think it's for her, it's knowing that you're screwing up and just kind of saying like, yeah, but that's kind of what I do.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's what I'm supposed to be.
But the hard part, I mean, the part for her that puts her kind of out on the, maybe on the, I don't want to say the edge, but she's farther out there than most people.
Sure.
Is that she doesn't know how to bring her, or never has the tools.
Right.
No one ever taught her.
That's, I think, the
how to
thing.
Be, you don't have to be perfect.
Right.
But you want to kind of be balanced on some
that's
level.
That's what she's not. You know, I think that it's from one extreme to the next extreme. It's always right. an extreme.
She's like,
you know,
over on
she's either this, trying to be yeah. a religious fanatic or yeah. she's on a 3-day meth bender or she's, you know what I mean? There's not a lot of, like I said, relaxing and kind of living within the parameters of what I'm pretty sure probably comes from parenting, you know what I mean? Like, you know,
yeah.
getting a set of, you know, a moral understanding of what it's meant, you know. I think for her going through, you know, given that she didn't really have much of a father and then being, you know, in love very young and having that not work out, I think that probably, you know, disallowed her from feeling like she had any grasp on what, you know, what it took to live in that, you know, to live within, you know, to just screw up a little or to just get a little better. You know, that right. those things don't admit. It's like, I got to fix it all tomorrow. You know, it was a lot of, early on in the book, there was a lot of, she would write notes to herself. And it was kind of placeholders for me. And I kind of wasn't sure if I wanted them in or not. And eventually I decided that I didn't. But one of the things she would constantly do was write notes, like lists to herself, like to-do lists. And it would say, like, lose 5 pounds in a week. Be a better mother, pull it together, you know, that kind of stuff. Like she was just like, but tomorrow, you know, but I'm going to start or starting Monday, you know, I got to stop all this. But it was never like, okay, I don't need to think about it that hard. I just need to do it. You know, it was hard to act in actuality. And then when you don't do it, you just go the other way. I remember one of the things that I always thought of when I was writing it too was, it's like when, you know, like the analogy of like there's a light at the end of the tunnel and that, you know, everyone's trying to get towards there. This might even be in the book. I don't remember. But, you know, for her, when the light got too far away, she would just turn around because she knows what's back. She knows what's in the dark. I mean, it's scary, but she knows what's there. She's already been there. So it was never like take a few steps. It was like, all right, if I screw this up, I'm going back the other way totally. And then you try and extremely, you know, get back into it again and you're unable to do so and you disappoint yourself. And then the only way to heal that is to try and not think about it. And it's just a vicious cycle.
What you're sort of making me think of is that, like, for a lot of people, the excesses mm-hmm. of life maybe happen when you're younger.
Sure.
But then they kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
And it's not that they become perfect either, but they find a way, mm-hmm. you know, they find a way of getting through.
Right.
She never does.
Right.
She's like in that extreme mm-hmm. category of like all that stuff that happened when she was younger.
Right.
It gets worse.
I don't know
better.
Though if true addiction is really can be, you know, I think if you go to, you know, some of the places where people really have substance abuse issues and things. I don't think it's like they pick, you know, they started young and they sort of pull it together. I mean, I think that is a lifelong struggle because I think that she could get so down on herself, you know, and then I think the thing that made it the hardest is, like I said, she could never get out of her own way. It's that the thing that would help her would be to be a good mother, to be a good actress, to do these things. But once she's getting close to that, she screws that up on purpose because innately she doesn't think she deserves it. She doesn't think right. she's the type of person that deserves happiness because, you know, I think that comes from, you know, whatever it was that she just didn't feel that. So then she would almost subconsciously screw it up even when she knew that's what would help her. You know, so it's these small things that become these huge things. And when you have the capacity to get truly disappointed in yourself to the point of almost, I can't live another moment thinking about this, you know, you can really do some damage both to yourself and to others.
Yeah. So do you see that Do you feel like writing the book had the transformational effect on you?
Yeah, I think so. I think it took me till the day I finished it to figure most of this stuff out. I think that for a while I just, you know, I pieced things together. But I think when I truly finished it and it's like when I really understood her. And it was when I kind of, you know, perhaps coming from a place of less knowledge, maybe in the beginning it was more judgmental. You know, but we're going over and over it again. I think I totally felt for this person. And I think it allowed me to not continue on the same path that both my grandmother and the character that I, you know, love and I think of as my sort of guardian angel did. Because I think it allowed me to understand that thing she never did, which is that maybe it's okay if, like, you know, if I put out a book and maybe people like it, that's okay. You know,
right.
Whereas yeah, for a long time, I was afraid to do that because I just didn't think, like, I like to write it, but I was like, I don't, you know, I should just be a bartender or something. And I shouldn't, you know, because you don't, you know, there was this feeling of not thinking highly of myself, but it was like she forced me to, you know, she forced me to believe in myself and to just say, you know, forget it. Maybe this is, you know, maybe I'm not so bad.
So do you think can you identify yourself as a writer now?
Yeah.
You allow yourself that?
I do. I used to say I worked in bars and I like to write, and now I say the other way around.
So you're a writer.
A writer works
in a bar.
Yeah.
Well, so do you in fact have a day job as a bartender?
A
night job?
I didn't for a few months. I was just actually talking about this on another thing where there was that beautiful, like, all during the writing I did, even through Columbia and everything, I worked in bars on the weekends and stuff. And then there was that beautiful, like, when I signed and there was like a 4-month, like, God, I'm like a writer for a living. Like, this is the best. This is the best, you know, and I was like sort of really happy. And then it just recently, having to go back has been it's not that I even didn't mind it, you know, and I think it might even help my process a little bit to keep me kind of out, like, not get too, I can, like, isolate myself. Like, I always think of, like, the part in The Shining that's the scariest is not the sort of supernatural elements. It's just the guy by himself for six months.
Yeah.
You know, I knew I could relate to that. So I think maybe getting out there and doing stuff is not that bad for me. But I loved that feeling of, like, God, I'm writing for a living. And it was, like, 6 months. And now recently I had to get another job.
Well, you know, writing, I mean, it's a tough gig. Writing is a tough gig.
And it's like, even if I go up and then a little down and then a little, you know, and just as long as it keeps going that way, I could do that forever. I don't mind doing it at all. I just, maybe each time I write another book, I'll get a little longer.
A little longer away.
A little longer away from the bar, yeah.
But the bartending is also, there's a social element.
Yeah, there's a social element. You learn a lot of stories. It helps me kind of get out there and not feel too trapped in my own head and too trapped into my own devices and whatever. I mean, I'm actually writing, my next book is kind of about that. You know, I think of that as my LA book. I want to write like a kind of a New York book. So, you know, with a similar sort of love and ambivalence, you know, just like there's a romance to it, but it's also kind of intoxicating, which is what I thought about when I was writing that book a lot. And so I don't mind, but I don't know how I got into that. But there was that there is that sense finally of, you know, two steps forward, one step back.
Well, you know, it's hard to be a full-time writer too.
Yeah, of course. You
know? And there is some benefit. There's some benefit to
keeping
yourself in the world.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, because
I think it'll help my process, to be honest, because I ended up getting a little too ticky tacky with and trying to and sitting, and I was just kind of isolating, and it was more the idea of it than it was the actuality. I think in actuality, getting out there and working, whatever, 3 nights a week, it's not that big of a deal. You know?
Well, no, it's actually pretty cool.
It's pretty good.
You know, that kind of work, you can
get away with that. Yeah.
You know, there's so many jobs where
that's impossible. That's one of the things that I was very wary of getting out of school and stuff was I wanted to at least write one book and give it my entire effort before I got a job that I thought would take away from that. Yeah. Before I got a job where, you know, you just don't have enough time, you know. And even your creative, the thing that's cool about bars is, you know, creatively I'm not exhausting myself the way I might be at working at an editor, you know, with an editor or working at a publishing house or something like that where being around books but not, you know, but I want my brain power to go into the words that I want to put out there, you know, and eventually if I decide not to, that's fine too. And I can do that, But I want to, for a while, like, really give it my all. And I think this is allowing me to do that, so I'm happy with it.
So the next, so this, as you said, this is really an LA book, and
yeah.
it's kind of got this, you know, pop culture movie ethos, you know, because it's about Dorothy, but then her
husband is successful as
an actor, and her kids kind of, you know,
they've flowed along that path, and then to be, and I think that as the, there is this idea that I was always enamored. Like I like to write that book in particular. I was always thinking about all of the, putting in a lot of character, like descriptions of where they were, because it always felt like a theater set. It always felt like, and I always thought of it in terms of scenes. It wasn't like I would write like four, like, scenes, and then I would almost storyboard them and put them up and change them around. It complicated things in terms of dates and stuff, to be honest, but I did always think of them in terms of these separate scenes, and then making sure each and every the wallpaper, you know, the types of shoes people wore, like, that was all, like, you know, set design that I thought was very important to this feeling, you know, cinematic in some way.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Well, it did have that sort of film.
Without it being like, you know, without it, what I liked is that it could be cinematic without it following, like, the tropes of a script.
Right.
You know, I didn't think of it in terms of they meet, and then it's, you know, and I didn't think of any of those sort of things, but I did think of it like the way a movie could look, you know, to, like, to look at each thing and make sure, you know, each scene could, you know, like, you know, like red velvet rope, you know, curtains would open up and you could see what they were doing, and then they would close, and then you could open back up and see again. I like doing that. Yeah.
Well, and you write pretty visually, you know.
Yeah, definitely. That's just sort of how I like to write. It seemed to suit the material as well.
Yeah. So now that you've written these characters, I mean, aside from her, is there somebody else in the book that you kind of, any more of this territory to be mined? Or are you done with, you know, can you say I've done that now?
To be mined. Well, that's interesting. I mean, the way I think about it is that she's based on my grandmother, but everyone else is kind of based on some part of me. So, I think in that way, you know, it's all going to be mined again, but not to give anything away necessarily, but who cares? I did think that it's possible that the New York book could be about the kid older.
Yeah.
So the grandson, 25 or something, and where he is now, and if he's fallen along a similar path.
Or not.
Yeah. Or if he's sort of, you know, how he's handling, you know, some of how his life was, and how his, you know, the plight of his family and all of those things. I did think that was a possibility. So that could be, that's a possibility that's, I mean, either way, it's going to be a character like that, whether or not his name is Jack Jr. or not, I don't know.
Right. And would you still use the same kind of narrative technique?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Because I think that to me is one of the most fun things. And, you know, maybe I could change who I could hint at it being or not being or whatever, but I definitely would want to be able to bounce around within characters and have somebody that is sort of all-knowing and can kind of guide the way, you know, the readership, you know, views the characters, so you're not stuck with how the characters view themselves or the world. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not mistaking that voice as okay necessarily. Right. You know, I remember writing some of the stuff with Dale and writing kind of despicable things. And the narrator, I don't think he was very empathetic to some of the characters, but he's not empathetic to all of them.
I think
that's the biggest thing, is that he can be very judgmental to people he sort of doesn't like. You know, and I was like, or doesn't think he's a good person or whatever. And I had a lot of fun doing that, just because I want him to be as human as everyone else.
Right.
You know, just because he loves Dorothy doesn't mean he loves everybody. And I want to continue with that, certainly, as I don't know if it's one of my strengths. I wouldn't say that, but it's something that I certainly enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that kind of came naturally to me, like being able to play with jumping around in space and time and having somebody that you sort of, you know, gerrymander the scenes the way he wants them to be, sort of.
So is there, I mean, I got to ask you, are there writers who you think of as heroes for you, you know, kind of the writers that whose work has motivated
Joan
you?
Joan Didion.
Yeah?
Probably, yeah. That would be the biggest.
Slouching toward
Bethlehem and the White Album and stuff. Yeah. Those were the ones where she would have Joan and then she would have I. Mm-hmm. I also remember Christopher Isherwood did that in Christopher and His Kind, where there was a guy, he was talking about himself was the I, and then Christopher was him when he was young.
Right.
And he could comment from a different perspective. I liked that a lot. And in terms of writing style and stuff, the only thing I can remember in terms of writing style, because I tried not to, one of the things I remember at school is that somebody would read like Borges and just immediately sound like Borges. I tried not to do that. I thought that was because it was so bad. But
it's inevitable.
But that's why when I was really writing, I would try and look for things. I would try and almost read sentences and read. I wouldn't try and read whole books and stuff because I didn't want to do that. And the one thing I remember in terms of stylistically was I was like 20 and I was reading A Movable Feast. And we ate well, and I was thinking about writing. And I was just sort of, but I didn't study it that much in high school, so I didn't really know. And there was a line, we ate well and cheaply and drank well and cheaply and slept well and warm together and loved each other. And I thought to myself, oh, you can kind of do whatever you want. You know, you don't have to have paragraphs or commas, or you can really just do whatever you want. If you think that sounds good, you can do that. And that opened me up to trying to do just, if I was going to do it, just sort of do it the way I wanted to do it. And I know that, I don't know if I can write a good sentence, but I know that I can write a sentence that I like. You know, that I like the way it sounds. I don't question that. There's like a meter to it that I naturally feel like I have an ear for, just in terms of what I like. And I just want, you know, sticking to that and being able to...
You should definitely stick to that because the writing in this book is really good.
Thank you.
And I think it's, you know, it has a really, it flows.
Yeah.
Know, there's a really smooth character quality about it that you know, you kind of, you notice that you're being, you know,
lulled into
writing,
something, but, or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, but I think you you flow really nicely.
Yeah, thanks. You know, that's something that I really was important to me, and I think I always was, like it or don't. I think I was just gonna. I had a couple of when I was young. There was I was a little bit too swayed by people telling me, you know, editing stuff down trying to listen to everybody and. It ended up felt like I was taking it took my voice away, and then in terms of I wasn't as interested in telling a story, so my voice was the most important thing. So, I just decided I'm going to do it the way I want to do it. If nobody likes it, I'll just keep it in a drawer.
That's all right. Well, I wanted you to read something from the book.
I can do that.
I think that's the perfect entry point to it.
Months later, actually probably less, Dale woke up in the middle of the night. He wasn't sure why. He hadn't heard anything. Instinct, I guess. But he was suddenly filled with energy. And, perhaps even more so, fear. He reached over to Dorothy's side of the bed and felt for her, but no one slept beside him. He breathed in deeply. He pulled off the covers and stood up. He noticed the bathroom door was closed, but low light was streaming through the half-inch space beneath the door frame. He walked to it, quietly, with measured steps. He opened it. The shower curtain was pulled, but two pedicured feet stuck out the far end. It was a hand-painted antique lamp, an East Coast winter scene, children sledding in the park, which just yesterday was on the bedside table, plugged in and lit, sitting on the toilet bowl. It sat perched on the lid. In the tub, one leg and foot was crossed over the other. Dale stepped two steps and opened the curtain. Dorothy lay sleeping. Peacefully sleeping in an empty tub with an avocado green face peel, dry and cracking, still on her face. Her hair was pulled back in a bun on her head. Her hands were clenched just below her breasts, one of which showed through her bathrobe. Her breaths were soft and mechanical. Her heart rate was slow, content. She breathed now only through her nose. In and out, only through her nose. Dale stared, disdainful, a while. Scratching the stubble on his neck and breathing, also, solely through his nose. His doing so, though, was because he was angry. His doing so, though, is because he wanted to control his breath. He realized his doing so, though, was because he'd lost control, and he wanted control, and he would do whatever it would take to regain it. He stopped breathing and opened his mouth and spoke. "Dorothy?" She didn't move. "Dorothy!" Louder. He grabbed her ankle and shook her leg. She opened her eyes and turned toward him and smiled, before closing them and pulling her leg away and getting comfortable and attempting to regain her rest. "Hi, honey," she replied, eyes still quiet, as though he'd caught her catnapping before an oh-so-important soiree. "What are you doing in here? Why the hell are you in the bathtub?" "What do you mean?" she nuzzled. Butchie was on her and he nuzzled too. "I'm sleeping." "I can see that you're sleeping. Why are you sleeping in here?" "I wasn't cozy in bed." "What does that mean?" "You kept hogging all the covers." She curled back into herself and looked quite comfortable. Dale left and went back to bed. The next day, Dale went out for a pack of cigarettes, and Dorothy was rather suddenly, in her eyes, all alone.
That's really good.
Thank you.
I think it reminded me that, you know, you were talking before about Dale's really...
Yeah.
He's not a sympathetic character.
No, and, no, no, at there, all.
In fact, there's the other scene that kind of blew me away was with him and Clover when she's a teenager. And
that's
Clover
a,
being, now I just should set it up. Dale is the husband of Dorothy, the father of Clover and
Clover's
Dylan.
Clover's the first daughter of them.
And then Dylan is the son.
The son, yeah.
And Clover is, she's also an important character because she ends up taking care of Dorothy.
Right.
And
ends up having the grandson with whom Dorothy hopes to share a connection with.
Right. So, you know? I'm really glad you read that section. That
Thank
part.
You.
It was really
Thank
good.
Thank you. That was a good, that's a good page or two.
Yeah, it's an evocative scene. So,
man.
Well, I really appreciate your talking to me about this book. I
Thank
think it's
you
really
so much.
Good.
Yeah. And, Thank you for having it. Me. I really appreciate it.
This has been Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk. I've been talking to Kevin Jack McEnroe about Our Town. Thanks.
Thank you.